The information from this podcast is not intended or implied to be a substitute for your personal medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. All contents, including text, graphics, imaging, and information contained or available through the session is for general education information purposes only. Please contact your personal physician with questions regarding your own medical issues.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to season two, episode one of The Doc and the Jock. And today we have our very first guest, Christine Buke. She is on today, and we're actually going to dig into nutrition and a lot of cooking. She comes to us with a degree in chemical engineering. Her kids are all traveling the Appalachian Trail this summer and hiking that. So she's making all this food for them and getting that, keeping her busy, getting all the foods ready. So I've been fortunate to taste enough. She started with us for our Strong 45 program, where she also got a sourdough starter. And I just received a very beautiful picture of all these breads she just did. So Christine, can you kind of dig into a little bit more of your background, what you have done previously with your engineering, and then kind of what has, you know, how this all started, where you, I mean, you literally cook and drop off stuff every week at the front desk, and you're always cooking, you're always talking to me about stuff. So I want to hear all about it, talk about the processes, but get into your background a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Charlene and Dr. Kim, for having me today. Like Charlene was saying, I have a degree in chemical engineering, but it's been a while since that officially was used in that capacity. I started, I'd say my first job was in 1991 at, interestingly enough, Kraft General Foods food company in New York. But a totally different sort of take on it, on food, than I have now. And then from there, I went to graduate school working in that time with polymers at, you know, through DuPont, and then went up to Connecticut at Pratt & Whitney and worked on parts for stealth fighter jet engines using high temperature polyimides. And then from there down to Boeing working on their composite aircraft. This is 20 something and 24 years ago, I had my first son. So decided to retire then. And we had three kids in 3 years, two dogs. And here I am, how many years later, an empty nester with a retired husband. So, going through that whole process and transformation, never really, you know, it's not like I gave up my engineering background, because really what it taught me was problem solving and how to, you know, research fundamental ideas and apply that to whatever. You know, like I went back briefly and did some technical writing for some biologic, you know, pharmaceutical companies. I knew nothing about biologics, but it's not about what it is you're making. It's how to look at a problem, study it from, you know, the research lab to production. And the chemical engineer tends, you know, is the person that would take the R&D, you know, from the bench to full scale production level in a, you know, plant. So whether that's, you know, aircraft parts, food, biologics, anything along the way, it's a similar way you look at something. So I think that's kind of what I gained from that, is problem solving and how to break something down. And then two of my children are also chemical engineers. So that kind of, you know, through high school and college, it's like, you know, hey, mom, you know, I can come up with this problem. Like, oh, yay. You know, I get to relook up, you know, valence electron ionic bonds and how they applied. Blah, blah, blah. And that was always, you know, a kind of a fun way to stay kind of in touch with that. But then also during that time when I was, you know, off out of work, technically raising the kids, I kind of re-sparked an interest I forgot I had in art. I remember going back to a grade school reunion and looking back and seeing how I was always voted the most artistic. And I'm like, I couldn't even remember that. So part of the time I went back and I took some art classes. I actually studied down at the Barnes Foundation with a fascinating painter, Edward Loper, who was one of the first African Americans to be accepted into the National Museum. Actually, his stuff at the White House now too. But he was fascinating, and through that met a fascinating group of people in a completely different, you know, aspect of what I had gone to school for. So that kind of brought out more of a I'd say, creative side again, but, you know, learning from the fundamentals of, you know, whether you're balancing, you know, like with science, you're balancing dimensions, you know, time and temporal dimensions in space. If you're looking at, you know, art, you're balancing line, light, color, and shape. If you're looking at cooking, you're balancing salt, fat, gases, and heat. So it's kind of, if you take something back and try to understand things from fundamentals, then, and how they balance, then it's a much more, you know, translatable process on coming up with your final product, as opposed to, you know, here, paint by number, or here, cook with this recipe, or, you know, here, just follow this. Because then if you don't understand from fundamentals what it is that's impacting your final, you know, your process, you can't have fun with it and be creative with it and edit it. And I think I was saying to Charlene, she's like, you got to write this down. I was like, I don't write anything down. I just sort of wing it as I go along. It's winging it, but it's winging it with like a purpose intention, you know, like, you know, back in school, you always, anything is balanced by, you know, pressure, volume, and temperature. You understand the fundamentals of that, you got everything. Or, you know, with math, you understand the, you know, the translational and spatial dimensions of something, you can get it. So that then my daughter, she was really interested in baking. And I wasn't much of a baker because I don't like sweets. So I don't like, you know, cookies and that kind of stuff. But baking is a little bit more of, for me, following a more, I'd say recipe, but procedure, you know, because you have, you know, with the sugars and all that kind of stuff. I preferred cooking. Again, like I said, you know when something's off, because it's, you either missing an acid, you're missing a salt, a fat, or something. But then once I, you know, got turned on to fermentation sort of baking, like Charlene gave us her first little sourdough mother, and I was like, what is this fun thing? And it was gooey and sticky, and learned more about the science behind the fermentation. I'm enjoying that, because even though it is, you know, follow this process, really it's about temperature. It's about, you know, the enzymatic activity that's going on and how you control that with time or temperature and stuff like that, and what your ingredients are. So that kind of is what sparked it. I mean, literally, I never saw a mother until, you know, 2 months ago. And I've been like, this is so fun. So that's kind of, I guess I've just been rambling about it, but that's sort of the way I kind of look at stuff, the way I approach new projects.
Yeah, which you do need to write all those recipes down. What are some of the things, and have you like calculated how much food you have made so far for your kids for the trail this summer? And then like, how long are they going for? How much food are you trying to make for them and stuff like that?
So the three of them, so my youngest one is graduating in May. So they're taking off, they're going southbound, which is Maine to Georgia because of the, you know, the weather and the temperature. So they're leaving beginning of June, or mid-June. So they're figuring they'll take, they're shooting for just under 5 months. And we have like mail-in drop points every 7 to 10 days. So of that, you know, we're trying to make at least 5 days worth of meals. I mean, because you stop along, you'll see some towns and you fill in that way. But the less processed stuff you can get, you know, one, less expensive for them, but two, better tasting and better nutrients to it. And so we're shooting for that. There's three of them going. My daughter's a vegetarian. My two sons are, they'll eat anything. So I'm kind of making a lot of beef jerky, but then a lot of other kind of meals. And, you know, we have to balance the weight of it. So, you know, we make the meals, dehydrate them, vacuum seal, and then certain ones are cold soaked. So you just need the cold water, but the ones that, you know, are hot, you know, you rehydrate with boiling water, they have to carry their own stove, their own fuels. So we're trying to, you know, minimize and optimize the amount of fuel that they need to use. So the way that the food is, you know, made and packaged and processed, you know, I'm trying to make it so that you need less fuel to rehydrate it. So kind of planning along that way. But again, just kind of winging as we go along too, you know, there's, and how much did I make so far? Well, made a lot, but the problem is I keep handing it out. Like my sister is like, the more I make, then my niece loves all my fruit leathers that I love. You know, I go to the store, every fruit that I see that's going, you know, starting to turn bad, I buy it all, And I put in the Vitamix and then dehydrate, but add a bunch of, you know, like other, you know, chia and flax and a bunch of stuff to it. And my niece, I think she's like a dealer now at the Kennett Middle School because she sits at her table like, I want some fruit leathers. And she's like, you know, she brings her friends over and they're making them. So I'm having a hard time stockpiling a lot of the food because it's, you know, the jerkies are all getting eaten up. So now I have to put my foot down and we're making it and going to vacuum seal it as they go.
It's and the beef jerky, beef jerky I've ever had. The granola she made me yesterday. Mm. Can you actually talk a little bit about the granola process? Because a lot, if you go to the store, which I'm always like, it's crap. Mm-hmm. It tastes like chemicals afterwards. Yeah. Can you tell us, not the exact, but just what you did, kind of what you told me the other day with the whole process with it and why yours actually tastes good and not like chemicals? Great.
Well, yeah. So in our group chat at the Strong 45, everybody, you know, Charlene really, you know, kind of drilled into us the importance of real foods, you know, no processed stuff. If it's got more than four ingredients, stay away from it. And I really felt the benefits of following that for the last 2 weeks, like tremendously. So when somebody said on the chat, like, where can I get good granola? And Charlene's like, hint, hint, Christine, where can she get good granola? So I'll look into this. So basically, you know, I was reading different processes on the soaking and or using sourdough. So I was like, well, if the soaking is good and using sourdough is good, I'm going to do both. Mm-hmm. So, but, you know, getting the whole thick oats, you know, with not processed, you know, just organic whole thick oats. We're fortunate. We have a great shop nearby down in Hockessin Harvest Market, and they've got all kinds of great grains and oats. But started with like just soaking that. And the reason you want to do that is you get rid of a lot of the phytic acid, which is like an anti-nutrient. It really does prohibit your body from absorbing other nutrients. And so soak those for like 24 hours in a yogurt and an acidic, like a cider vinegar sort of solution. But then all my grains, like I had nuts and flax seeds and pumpkin seeds and sesame, all kinds of raw seeds, and soak those, you know, again, for the same reason, get rid of those phytic acids. Then I took like dates and figs and other sweeteners. So instead of having to add sweeteners to it, like sugars or processed like coconut oils, I pureed the dates and the figs that had been soaked and kind of mixed all that together. And another something I saw is a lot of people add coconut oils and bake it. And I went with a little bit of grass-fed butter instead of the coconut oils because people are afraid of butter, but you know, you shouldn't be afraid of fats, but I think we're just so ingrained with just from public service announcements from the government, stay away from fats and butter. But then some cinnamon and vanilla and nutmeg. But then when I combined all that together, I add the sourdough mother, which it kind of gives it a good sort of background sort of sweetness flavor, again, without adding sugar, but that kind of binds it all together. Then I put it in my dehydrator for about 24 hours on low at 115. So then you don't kill off the beneficial and, you know, bacteria and the denature of the enzymes that kind of you want to keep. So, and I also found it didn't give it that sort of, burnt, I don't want to say burnt, but that waxy aftertaste that you get when you bake something, you know, with coconut oil. Anyway, so threw all that in the dehydrator and I was like, huh, this didn't come out bad. So, and I know, you know, like you, when you know how something's made, you feel better eating it.
Yeah. Off the top of your head, do you know what brand of oats you did get for this?
It just said oats, thick, organic from Canada. And it was just basically the Harvest Market. They have their grains that they package themselves, which I guess I trust them. So that's what I went with.
And the stuff here.
Yeah,
because I get a lot of the flowers from Italy or Ireland, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So unfortunately.
Yeah, I'll have to start doing that. But the other kind of happy accident I found, not happy. So realizing you don't want to choke soak chia seeds because they get gelatinous.
Yeah.
So I did. And then I'm like, dang it, now I got this big, you know, soaking bowl. I don't want to waste all these other seeds. And then when I make my sourdough, I always put the seeds in it and I had millet, which you also want to soak. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to try it in there. And actually when I first made the dough and it was like a little gooier, but I just took it out of the oven and it came out delicious. So I want to understand more about what that gelatinous chia soaked did to my bread that really came out good. So sometimes little happy accidents where you just, I don't want to waste these ingredients. I'll just use them in something else. That we'll see how that works.
You recently took a cheesemaking class, correct?
Oh yeah, that was fun.
Have you played around with that at all?
No, not yet, because I have like a whole counter full of other, like, okay, first I'm going to try this, and then I'm going to try this and this. But that's on my next project, is the cheese. And that was fun. My sister and I went down to Modern Stone Age Kitchen, their cooking school.
Oh, yeah.
I'm like, you know, okay. I'm actually going next week to a nixtamalization of corn, of maize class, which I'm really excited about that. Another process that you could take a grain or a seed, like a corn, and make it bioavailable. So that's going to be fun. But the cheese was really fun. Again, another sort of fermentation process that, I'm really trying to learn more about. And I've got a couple of books I just ordered more on fermentation. And I just went to a meadery where it's fermented honey. Even though, according to Charlene, we shouldn't be touching any alcohol, I'm still going to try to do this fermented honey and see how it tastes.
Yeah. At least it's coming from honey, right?
Here we go.
Yeah. But it's funny when you were saying about the background with the food, you know, and I was thinking that I just started recalling working at Kraft General Foods, you know, 24 years ago. One of my projects was working on Kool-Aid, which, and I was doing the moisture studies because we were switching packaging from remember those cardboard, coffee can size containers, the cardboard. And the complaint was, you know, you open them and then they would always harden, you know, so from the customer standpoint, like they couldn't drink this Kool-Aid quick enough. So they wanted to change the packaging. So to make Kool-Aid even better, we made this awesome thick plastic packaging, which they still use today, but I helped do the moisture studies on the improvement over the cardboard packaging to this plastic monstrosity that we don't, you know, I'm looking back now, it's like, oh, good Lord, I can't believe I contributed to that. But anyway, here we are.
This was actually, because I was thinking about it, because I'm doing a hike this summer too. Are you figuring out the calories on these packaging for your kids? That's like the only time I really look at calories is when I, like for my hikes, I'm like, okay, I need this many a day. This is how many packages of food and my meals. Yeah. But have you like gone through and calculated that out? Because that can't be any, that's for you smart engineering brains.
Well, I'm aware of, like, I haven't done it like out yet, because again, this is all a work in process. Like we're literally making it as we go along, but yeah, they definitely, like my kids definitely want to know that. So I am going to start, like once we get down, like we're still doing a lot of, you know, I'm basically anytime I can add an ingredient that I think has a lot, you know, a lot of protein and nutrients, like for example, like making any pastas, I'll dehydrate, like I'll make the sauce out of, like, I'll take cashews and I'll puree the cashews with the tomato sauce, but add like, you know, a lot of fresh basil, like a lot of, you know, things to it that will enhance it. So I wouldn't send them off with like a tomato sauce based sauce, but I'll do it with, like, I have somewhere I soak sesame seeds, roast eggplants, a lot of garlic, and then puree that up with this sauce and then dehydrate that, take the, you know, put it all in my grinder, grind it down to a powder, again, to minimize the amount of fuel needed to rehydrate it. But what I'm doing it right now is packing as many nutrient dense things in, and then I'm going to have to figure out how much I'm doing. Again, where this is all being done on the fly. But we are trying to be very well aware of now portion sizes, what I'm making, what's in it, and how to figure out the calories. And then, you know, from the different meals of breakfast, lunch, and dinner, there's certain points in the day you'd rather be carb heavy, and then others protein heavy, you know, as you hike through the day. So to balance which meals, you know, have, you know, the right balance and the time, and then also like have more snacks, because they, you know, every hour you want to have some sort of something like a snack, and that's where the fruit leathers come in, and or the jerky sticks as you go along the day. So not just to figure out what the calories are that are in the meals, but how to time them through the day and when to eat the, you know, carb heavy ones and the protein heavy ones, and how to space them properly.
How are you, like, what's the packaging that you're like using? Cause they're going to be dumping hot water into it, right?
So I'll take, like I have a vacuum sealer and vacuum, you know, seal bags. So say for example, I make, a red lentil quinoa chili, right? And I have a little red lentils, a lot of beans, quinoa. I like using quinoa because it is, you know, more nutrient dense than like a rice or something. So little quinoa, beans, red lentils, garlic, I forget what else, there's a bunch of stuff in there. And then I make that like a meal. And but when you dehydrate, you want to minimize the fats in there because the fats don't dehydrate. You know, obviously it's water soluble, but I mean, not water soluble, but you also, that you want to have as little amount of fats because then that will extend the shelf life of the meal once it's dehydrated. But I have, so if it's something I wanted to add, I have little packets of olive oil and or like I have freeze-dried cheese that I can add when I package it as separate. So, but for example, I'll make the chili and then put it on the trays, dehydrate it, and then it comes out like, you know, hard pieces. I break it up small, weigh them out into portion sizes and really just field testing. Like, Katie, here's a big bowl of chili. Is this how much you want to eat? All right, we'll take that much and dehydrate it. Then I put it in the vacuum sealer. And the interesting thing is, if you have harder pieces, you want to package it properly because then the piece might poke through the vacuum packaging and it breaks the seal.
Yeah.
I try all these things out. And then what I do is that the next, then I let them sit and I throw them in a backpack and I move them around a while and see how they can carry. And then I rehydrate because I'm not going to make all these meals and then get out there and be like, oh shoot, this one spoils or this one doesn't do this and that. So then I'll wrap if it's got pokey pieces on, I just read this piece of advice on the paper towel, write on it, like what's in it, what's the ingredients, the nutrients, when it was made. Then you line the vacuum bag with that paper towel and then you seal that and that'll protect the bag. And then when you go to eat it, you got your paper towel to use.
Oh,
when
yeah.
And when you gotta, you know, remove what you ate, you have the paper towel to use for that. So we try to package it that way. And then when they go to cook it, let's say for each, you know, portion size, you need maybe a cup and a half of hot water. So they'll have their little stoves, they heat it up in the pot. We'll tell them to pre-soak the meal in the cold water so that it uses less fuel. So it starts to soften up. Then you pour that in, you know, then you drain that, you put that in with the hot water. You let that boil for a minimal amount of time and you make it pot cozy to retain that heat. And then you just let that sit. You go set up your camp, do whatever. And when you're done, you come back and then that meal has rehydrated within, you know, so you can use your fuel as little as possible by pre-soaking and by insulating your pot. But then there's other meals I'll make, like my son's making a lot of, because now he also bought a dehydrator so he can help. But he's making a lot of cowboy caviar, or I make cold soaked pasta salads with a lot of vegetables. And so if they're going, like say if they're having that for lunch and don't want to breast up the thing in the morning, they'll take like their Nalgene, you know, water bottle, fill that with the water and the meal and let that sit for a period of time while they're hiking. 5 hours later, you have your cold soaked pasta, you add a little drizzle of olive oil. I'm making like spice packets to add to that, like Italian spices and blah, blah, blah. And then there you go.
You're going to be eating some really good stuff
I didn't realize that.
My daughter, I said, every package is going to have, every Dropbox is going to have extra meals that when you see people on the trail, you're going to share a meal and people will, you know, will have, all of a sudden they'll have like a, you know, a curry, roast potato, a sweet potato and chickpea meal that they weren't expecting to have.
Fantastic.
Yeah. The sauce, you shared for the spaghetti, had an awesome sauce. I don't even know what that was or what was in it. Do you remember it was like orange?
Oh, that was the cashew bait. That was the cashew cream sauce.
So good.
Yeah.
Totally different. My boys loved it. It was really good.
And it's nutrient dense. Now, my other problem is one of my sons has severe peanut and nut allergies. So I have to be careful. I can't do certain things that most people hiking, live on peanut products and, you know, peanut butter is a really dense nutrient thing. So he has to avoid that kind of stuff. So that's going to, you know, take out a good ingredient, but we can make substitutions.
Basically a nut allergy, a vegetarian, and then can eat whatever.
Yeah, except for the one that can eat whatever, he's the one that his favorite ingredient is preservative. Like, he's like, he does like good food, but he doesn't thrive on it. Where like, I'm not eating that. I want good stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny.
So I love hearing about what you're doing, but when you look at kind of like, you know, the people that are listening, they're not going to quite understand how to do like the dehydration and the fats and the figuring all those out. And all the things that you're telling us to do is really also good for like day to day. Like, how do you cook a nutrient dense meal is what, you know, then you take the extra step. Awesome. Of like dehydrating it and make it last forever. But like, if somebody came up to you and said, hey, like, how do you prep that, right? The engineer part of you says, well, this is what I do. But like, if I came to you and I said, how do you really prep a meal of like, how much fat are you putting? What are you thinking about in order for me to get full on a meal, right? Like, what would you recommend?
Well, I think I was it Charlene you told us? And that really stuck with me. It's like, I just, in general, whatever's on your plate, eat all the proteins first and then eat the vegetables and then eat the rice or the carb portion. So when I think of it, like, I think like whatever you're making, make sure there's enough filling, like quality protein in there, and start with, you know, having a lot of that, and then add, you know, vegetables and greens and that to whatever your menu is going to be. Because I think like, you know, without, I mean, I don't know exactly how to answer what you're saying in terms of, I don't calculate, you know, you need this many grams of this, that many grams of that. I just kind of, again, it's just more of a feeling. Like I just kind of see like, you know, that's not going to fill you up and keep you full, like, or it's empty calories or it's processed, and processed stuff just doesn't satisfy and doesn't keep you satisfied. So I don't really calculate the amount of fats and stuff like that as much as just by feel or by instinct.
Which I feel like when it's real food, real nutrient dense food, you're more likely to be able to get those body signals to feel when you're full.
Mm-hmm.
Versus the processed food, you're just going to go. Bag of Oreos. I mean, how many people have told you they've sat there and ate an entire bag of Oreos or chips or something like that?
Yeah.
But then after they've done that, they're like, nope, that didn't do it. And then they go for something else. And that wasn't it either. And go for something else. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that doesn't fill it in. No. But it's also like, I just like food. I like all kinds of food. And I like sharing it with people too, but I also, it just makes me, I don't want to say cringe, but like, it makes me sad to see like that people, and I get why. Like, it's a very time consuming, it's, you know, you have to educate yourself, you have to, but it's almost like once you see, you can't go back.
Sure.
And, you know, like once you see, it's hard to go back, and it's, you can't, you know, you don't want to like, I don't want to say judge somebody, but you don't want to like tell somebody don't eat that, because you have to sort of gently sort of educate them on like, hey, wouldn't this taste better than that? Maybe you shouldn't have that many fats in there or that type of processed stuff in there. So it's the more you can enjoy it yourself and then just share it bit by bit with other people. You just hope they, I don't know, kind of see, but it's definitely more time consuming, like, you know, from this 45 challenge where Charlene says, you know, no processed stuff, no sugar stuff, all our little chat group is everybody saying, oh my gosh, I'm stressed out about how to prep for the week. I'm stressed out about how to maintain this. I kind of say like, do that as a goal, but don't be exclusive to it in the sense that, you know, if you improve, if you do it 80% better than you used to, that's 8% better. But like, if you're like, I have to only, and then you stress, and then you're like, now I don't know what to eat and I can't eat. Do what you can, you know, like, don't stress about like, it has to be 100% like, or nothing. If that's not where you are, you can work your way up to getting there. But if you're going from zero to like, you're eating. I mean, I'm telling you, I haven't bought a commercial piece of bread since you handed us that jar. That was since before that, like literally, I have not bought any bread. Now, if you told me 3 months ago, go out and make your own bread and don't ever touch any processed again, I'd been like, what are you, crazy? But as you sort of do it bit by bit and it becomes more part of your passion, it doesn't feel like it's a change or a chore. It's just now this is natural. You know, so it's like, you know, to advise somebody just to go and just eliminate all this other stuff that you've been used to your whole life now, it's not as reasonable as saying, hey, make these little changes a little bit at a time. And then the more little changes you make, you get your momentum going. And next thing you know, like even just buying spices, like you look at any popular spice mixes, they're more likely than not have some MSG or something in there. So just look up online, like, oh, I like Sazon Goya. Look it up online. You only need turmeric, coumarin, whatever's in there, and just put that and avoid the MSG. But those are like little things you can kind of just do after. But if you told somebody ahead of time, go 100% and don't look back, that's hard.
Absolutely. What were there any other nutritional changes you made during Strong 45 that like you're still doing? What's worked? Those kind of things.
Well, yeah. I mean, for me, it was a huge change, and I think part of it too is, and I think Dr. Kim, you had mentioned at one of Charlene's, when you came in and talked during 45, you said the biggest predictor of your health is your community, and that is like 100% true. Like it's, you know, like coming into the 45 challenge, which, you know, included, you know, going to a workout thing every day, no processed foods, no alcohol, which was, you know, no sugars. You had to, you know, walk 20 minutes every single day, meditate every day, you know, all these different things. And I'm like, all right, I could do that. But when you have to do it, you know, like you could do that any day, but when you have to do it every day, day in, day out, day after day, the ingredient that I realized I was missing was discipline. And I always gave myself that sort of, I would say an out, like, oh, I can do that, but I'll do that after. Like, I can't do it now because I'll do it after, you know, after this is done, or, you know, because you're dealing with, you know, you have family issues, you have health issues and various things. And well, I can't do that now because I have to deal with this, or I can't do that. And, you know, and my sister kept pressing me. She's like, Christine, you have to do this challenge. I'm like, Denise, I can't. I have this going on and that. And after, you know, mom's all straightened out, or after, you know, these health issues are done, maybe then I'll think about it. But those are never going to go away. So when I first walked in, and actually I was coming in from like a family emergency the day we're supposed to start. And I'm like, say, Denise, I can't make this happen. I can't commit to 45 days of this, all this stuff in my life. And that first day I walked in, and I was like reconnecting with people that I knew years ago and forgot. Like, and I felt kind of alone before, because I thought I was just sort of dealing with my own health and family issues and that kind of stuff. So I felt alone, even though I wasn't. But then I walked in there and it was like, felt connected to a community of new people I met, people I used to know. And I walked in, they're like, Christine, I haven't seen you in forever. Like, where you been? And when you said that thing about that's the biggest predictor is a community of health, that was so true, because it changed my perspective on my own health, on my own priority. And then the change that I think I've made over the last couple months reflects on the people that I was blaming, not blaming, but using as an excuse why I couldn't go ahead and do these things. So the community made a huge difference. And then, you know, the discipline, you know, recognizing and kind of owning up to, all right, these were big excuses that I was using. Yeah, there are big things going on in my life, but I can't just make them excuses. And I realized I had no discipline. It's easy to say I could do this, but I can't because of these reasons. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And so after the first week, and now it's like, remember you saw me in there, I was doing two classes every day, but I was getting there for the 8 o'clock and I was setting my alarm and barely getting there. Now I'm like, I'm up at 6 because I'm sleeping great. And I'm like, huh, well, I guess I'll just go to the 7 since I'm already awake. Where before it was like, how am I going to get myself to this 8 o'clock class? And now I'm like, I'm sleeping better. I'm up awake. I can't, you know, and then you go in and you meet all these people. It's funny. There's one woman I met today in the class and didn't realize that she's from my family all's from Ireland and she's from Ireland. And it turns out she's literally just like a few miles from where my family all lives in Ireland. And she went to school with my cousin. So it's kind of like, you meet people. She's like, I know your cousin. So we did a selfie today and she was Facebooking it or whatever to my cousin in Ireland. But again, it's all the community of the people that you meet. And there's no way I could have done any of this without coming, you know, you need, and then like you feel accountable sort of, but you're accountable to yourself, not to anybody else. And once I got over that hump of that, of like giving myself excuses upon excuse why I shouldn't or couldn't. And again, you know, and then we're going through, like I said, life changes now, like I'm empty nester, husband retired. And it's like, I was kind of feeling bad about myself because I was like looking for a purpose, like for like 2 or 3 years now, I kept saying to my husband, like, God, I feel so like stuck. I just need something to do. Like, I didn't know, I was looking for a purpose. And that's why I was given excuses. Well, I like again walked, but I had all these ideas in my head. And then I walked into that gym and all of a sudden it was like everything just culminated. You know, it was like all these ideas were like starting to ferment, like the fermentation, like all that was going on in my head, but I really didn't know what to do with it. And then all of a sudden I felt better about myself. I felt better about the people I was around and being exposed to like really fun, good people, like Charlene's very like just motivating and, you know, really interested in, you know, D1 Dom, like I walk around with, you know, toe spreaders now in my feet. So I can get around. And the balance does everything. So I'm walking around, you know, blue goops between my toes. And, but I wouldn't have done that on myself, but on my own. Like, and even though like, I can research anything, but you need the discipline to do it. And you need the community behind you to encourage you and to push you to do it. So I guess those are the biggest changes was the discipline, the community, cutting out the alcohol, which is a massive difference. You know, I didn't think I could do it. And it wasn't even like, didn't think I could do it. It was like, again, your habits, you're just used to, well, these situations, I'm just so used to having to do, you know, you go out and now it's like, I don't want it. I don't need it. And that was a big change too. And that was all because it was like, well, I only have to do it for 45 days because that's all the challenge is for.
You have to do it for 45 days.
Yeah. And now it's past 45. So
my big final question, is there any plans, future plans with all of this cooking that you're doing?
Well, if it was up to you, there would be.
Exactly. I think that's a bit loaded question.
Yeah. No, well, I appreciate that. And like, you know, Charlene's most, you know, encouraging person. She's like, you should do it. And I do have a lot of these ideas and stuff in my head, but I think at one point I said to you, I was like, the best way to ruin like a good hobby is to like make a job out of it, you know? but my sister, she's like, come on, we got to do this. But I don't know. Like, I'm just, as long as I enjoy doing something, yeah, I'll take it as far as I can do it. And want to do it, but no, it's something fun. And, you know, we've been talking about it, but yeah, it'd be fun to, you know, like all this, the science behind fermentation between the actual science behind making it happen. And then the science behind the benefits to your body is something fascinating that like, I think what we're calling it, the fermentorium at anchor or something like, you know, and cheeses and, you know, all this good stuff that you can do to your body. Kombucha. I love kombucha. So I don't know. We'll see. It'll be kind of fun.
I'll just keep annoying her every time. I mean, I'm pretty sure I emailed you about a podcast and forced her to like get lunch with me and,
you know,
now she's just stuck here talking.
But you never know. But I know I do. I heard commitment to self and the passion that you feel. And at the end of the day, that's also improves health as well. So obviously whatever you decide, I think it's wonderful. I can hear it in your voice and I think that's awesome.
Yeah, well, you too have both been like nuggets of information that sticks. Like again, like the community that you see Dr. Kim and your practice that would impacts people, and Charlene like exhibits that in her business and the way she deals with the community of people that come in there. It's incredible.
You're sweet.
Awesome.
All right. Time. Yes. Thank you so much. That was like your first official podcast, right?
Yes.
Yeah, especially when I get the text this morning. Well, I was at the 7 o'clock class, mind you. Yesterday, would you mind talking? I was like, I've never done a podcast. I don't know if I could do this, but all right.
Definitely. We might have to check up on you in a little bit.
Oh, too, yeah.
See how things are going.
I'll have to drop off some bread there, Dr. Kim.
Yeah. All right. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
And we'll talk to you soon.
Yep. All right. Bye.
Bye.